Blog Talk Radio.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of TNJ Radio. Once again, we appreciate you joining us. I'm joined by my main man, Jay Wells. How you doing, brother?
I'm excellent, bro. Good afternoon, kings and queens. I hope everyone's having a great week.
Absolutely. Things are going great for us over here at TNJ Radio, and we just appreciate the continued support. We've been going strong. This is our second week going in at an hour, so we'll be here with you from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m., and we are really excited about that because it gives us a little more time to get into the topics that, you know, we really want to discuss. If you want to talk to us, please feel free to give us a call, area code 347-324-5360, 347-324-5360. If you want to catch up with me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at TFOS_. And where can they find you at on Instagram and Twitter, Jay?
You can find me at both places, Worldwide Wills. I'm easy to find, and I'm always posting something.
All right, so y'all can find us right there on the social networks if you want to catch up with us and keep in touch with us outside of everything that we're talking about on TNJ Radio, Solution-Based Radio. You know, today we saw the State of the Union address a few weeks ago, and we kind of thought about, you know, how President Obama was up there, and he, I don't know, that might have been more than a few weeks ago, but we thought about how he talked about the state of the United States of America, but one of the things that rarely gets talked about is the state of the black man in America. And furthermore, the black man in America is, I'll straight up say it, public enemy number one, in my humble opinion. First of all, being one, and second of all, knowing thousands of them and seeing the plight of our brothers throughout the history of my time on this earth. But prior to that, there's no question that black men have been demonized and are public enemy number one. And I think that we are the most looked down upon, negatively stereotyped, targeted group for various things, whether it be crime, whether it be disenfranchisement, and the list could go on and on. And the problem with that being is it is the sole reason for the destruction, the systematic destruction of the black family and the black community. And I was looking back maybe a few days ago about how back, you know, when we first got to this country, how the black man was systematically and purposefully taken away from our women. How we were purposefully separated from children that we gave that we basically gave birth to, even though we can't give birth. But you know what I'm saying? We actually, you know, bred these children, but we were separated from these children during the earlier days of civilization here in America. We were purposefully taken away from our children, purposefully taken away from our women, our wives. And we were substituted. We were substituted by white men who raped our women and began to have kids with them. We were substituted by straight up hard work and labor, which became the norm for that time. And that is where we really became outcasts in society, where we were thought to be nothing more than baby makers, and that's what they literally used us for, to continue the stock as they saw us, which was to continue making babies for the slave trade. And that's where the basis of our current situation is. And what we're going to talk about today is really a lot along those lines. Why are black men public enemy number one? What is the state of the black man in America? What is our plight? Where are we? Most importantly, what solutions can we provide that can be implemented fairly quickly to start producing some change and moving things in a positive direction. And, Wells, with that being said, there's a hierarchy in the world, as we all know, in terms of importance to people. And I just want to get you in here, man, and where do you think, in terms of the state of the union, the state of the black man in America, where are we on the food chain?
It's in this crazy food chain that we call America, man. We got to be honest with ourselves and acknowledge that we are at the very bottom. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is, like, I saw this a couple days ago, and I saw this a few weeks ago during, like, the entire Eric Garner situation, and it was a crazy statistic that said a black man is killed every 28 hours by the police in America. I didn't want to believe that, but I was like, geez, I know it's awesome. I said, this can't be accurate. And numerous sources shown that to be true, and I was just like, wow. And it makes me think about the images that have been created, which is something that we've spoken on numerous occasions. But it's like when you think about the images that are created, the way people view us, it's one of those things that makes you kind of wonder. It's like, forget them and forget how they view us. How are we actually viewing ourselves? And that's something that that's what that really made me think about. How are we viewing ourselves? And it really brought me to the point where I started thinking about myself, how I've been raised, and people that I know. And it made me think about the fact that we're the only culture that genuinely runs away from our own community. And it's like, we all know black people that go out of their way to kind of avoid neighborhoods that are so-called too black. Like, and we just think about that, man, the amount of self-hate that we have for each other, the amount of self-hate that we have within ourselves, and that stuff kind of stems from what you were talking about, the way we were separated and divided during slavery. And when you think about us compared to other cultures, we are the only demographic that has had that type of self-hate ingrained into them. It's not even comparable when you think about the history of other cultures around the world. And you think about the fact that we genuinely have dark-skinned brothers, for example, that won't date dark-skinned sisters because they fear of having a dark-skinned child. And even what makes it even crazier, there's light-skinned women that won't date dark-skinned. They're afraid to date light-skinned men because they don't want to have light-skinned or fair-skinned children. It's like on both ends of the spectrum, we have come to the point where we hate what we are. And that's something that's just blasphemous when you think about it. It's like we've been totally brainwashed into thinking every form of us is wrong. And that's something that is crazy to me. And I think about something, Trav, you know this, and people that know me know this, I'm really big into Booker T. Coleman. He says a lot of stuff that I kind of feel, especially when it comes to our culture and how we relate to each other. And he made this point where he was stating that we've allowed all of the outside stuff, slavery, the media, just all the outside influences, convince us that we are a lower class. And that has to stop, and that starts with us. Like our generation, we have to spearhead that. So we have to be the ones on the forefront teaching brothers and showing sisters that, hey, man, you're cool the way you are. It's okay to wear your natural hair. Hey, man, you don't have to use skin lightening cream. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's okay for you to be you. And we've gotten to the point now, man, where every image of us makes certain black people feel like I don't want to be that kind of black person. Or if someone is wearing it's like the hoodie syndrome. It's like you see a brother in a hoodie, you're immediately afraid of him. So it's brothers that will literally go out of their way to not wear a hoodie.
So, excuse me. I apologize, man. My throat has been completely out of it these last few days. I feel like I talk too much at work. Not that I want to, but I have to. And my throat has been paying for it the last few days. But I just want to run something by everybody because I think this is extremely important when you talk about the state of the black man in America. And the reason it's important is because a lot of, I would say virtually, so in my opinion, things work like this. There's two main determinants, in my personal opinion, that kind of let you know where you might wind up in life. Your family situation, so whether you have a stable home to live in, and not just the home, but the proper environment in the home, and access to education. I think those are 9 times out of 10 the main two determinants that will really help paint a picture of whether or not a person is going to be successful or not. Most people that grow up in stable households and have access to quality education turn out to be all right. And so I'll share this in regards to where we are on the food chain in terms of education. 42% of black male students attend schools that are under-resourced and performing poorly. Now, think about that. 42% of our young brothers are attending schools that are under-resourced and performing poorly. Black boys are 3 times more likely to be suspended or expelled from school than their white peers, which ultimately causes them to miss valuable learning time in the classroom. And I remember my high school football coach used to always say, if you're going to go to school, you might as well go to class. If you go to class, you pay attention, you're going to at least get a C. If you pay attention, you probably going to get at least a B. And that made all the sense in the world, but if you're suspended and expelled, then you're missing time and you're not in class. Black boys are 2.5 times less likely to be enrolled in gifted and talented programs than their white counterparts. Okay? Black male students make up 20% of all students in the United States that are classified as mentally retarded. Although they are only 9% of the student population. So as you can see, when you just look at that little snippet, just that little snippet that I just threw out there from these statistics, it already tells you where we are, because these are kids that are already in high school or grade school, rather. This is before you even get to the point to where you might even become a productive citizen in society. Your educational situation is so bad that you don't even have an opportunity. So we usually start so far behind that you have so much ground to make up that it's almost impossible to get where you need to be. I have so many people that tell me, and non-black people, because black people understand what we're up against, and so they get it, and they usually have been through the same thing. But you'll get a lot of non-black folks saying to you, man, I can't believe you even made it out of those situations. I can't even believe that you are where you are. And it's because of the type of stuff that I just reeled off. And so I don't know. I just thought that was really kind of profound, not surprising, but it really paints a clear picture of how we get off to such a bad start, so to speak, and why we're at such a disadvantage.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. It's like, it's not surprising because we see it. You know what I mean? We see it in friends, family members, people that we know. We see these things. But at the same time, it's always startling when you kind of see it and you hear statistics like that. But it kind of really breathes into the whole prison industrial complex. And that's really something that kind of plagues our community. It creates an environment where people are being prepared. They're not being prepared to learn and gain formal education. they're prepared for, they're getting prepared for another lifestyle. It's almost to the point where people are really getting trained to live a shady lifestyle, or people, it make, it kind of creates an environment where you don't want to go to school. You, like, you lose any interest you have in formal education, because you know when you go, somebody's going to be harassing me, or I can't, if I'm moving too slow, or if I'm learning too slow, I'm going to get left behind anyway, so what's the purpose in going? It creates a situation where people don't want to learn, instead of teaching those study habits and teaching the basics to, that make people want to learn. And something, I can't remember the book, but I remember reading something stating that school isn't necessarily taught to get you from point A to point B. There's a lot of things that happen in education where you go from A to C, B to D, instead of just going, hey, this is the first step, this is the second step. And it's designed in a way to kind of teach people critical thinking, but at the same time, all it does is confuse a lot of people who have never been put in a situation to have to think critically, which is kind of, it sounds kind of weird, but it really does make sense, because people learn differently, and you mm-hmm. can't have an education platform that is designed to teach people the same way. And again, because we are all different, some people can sit and listen to a professor speak, and some people really need something drawn out on the board. It's just plain as day. And when you think about the standard education system, they really expect us all to learn in the same manner. And the thing is, especially in African American communities, just underprivileged communities in general, they don't have the resources to actually vet students out to see what works for people. It's like they just feel like, oh, she's not keeping up. Oh, we got to put her in a special education class. Or, mm-hmm. oh man, this brother has a stuttering problem. He's getting put in special education for stuttering? You know what I mean? Like, right. That's like a common, that's not a special education, that's not a special need. That just means, hey, we have to work with him in a different way. That doesn't necessarily mean that brother or sister is truly behind. So it's like the school system, it is flawed. And that's why education reform is so important. And that's why that's one of the major reasons for the surge in charter schools and people going out of their way to try to get their children into private schools. It's like the public school system is continuously down, and it's created an environment where we don't feel comfortable learning. And that's the unfortunate situation. It's like we truly don't feel comfortable learning in those situations. It's like when I think about it, I can just replant this in my head and thinking about the school system, the Detroit public school system, for example. And we're both products of the Detroit public school system. And when you think about that, man, think about how many people you know that were not prepared for life after high school.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I know I wasn't. I didn't develop real study and things. I had pretty decent grades. I didn't develop real study habits until college. That's when I realized, hey, man, I can't just go to class and pass. You know what I mean? I have to really go and do independent studying. I have to do independent reading, because the school system didn't put us in a position to actually have to learn how to think for ourselves. And just using Detroit as an example, I'm sure that's not the only inner city that had that issue. I speak to people from the D.C. area all the time, and they always tell me that. Like, they just never – like, and it's funny, man. Like, people straight up say, I didn't need to study. But it's like they had to learn how to study when they got to college. It's like our school, public school, it's really unfortunate when you think about it. They really drop the ball, and it's really up to us to kind of emphasize the importance of educating our children at home. We have to focus on that. It's like we can't count on the teachers or the school itself to prepare our children. We have to take ownership in that. And that's something culturally a lot of us just weren't prepared to do. Because you think about it, man, a lot of older Black people, if they did have education past high school, it wasn't too much further along. So you can't ask someone who's been removed from school 10, 15 years to try to teach a child or try to help a child. But we have to find ways to kind of use the knowledge that we do have to try to help our children. And I think that's one of the things that we really kind of dropped the ball on. It's like parents need to take a little bit more ownership in that. And I think that's the first thing, because it's very obvious. The school system isn't designed for us in its current format.
Yeah, I agree. And kind of switching gears a little bit on that, we really want to talk about a little bit about the jail system too, and a little bit about incarceration, because we and Wells and I kind of had these conversations about how the police can target you and treat you any kind of way, and it's okay. As a black man, you have to take this almost barbaric treatment from police and not be able to defend yourself because you have this stigma on you as a black man that you're violent and you're automatically guilty and you don't deserve to be able to defend yourself in circumstances, right? So when the police, when you encounter the police as a black man, and this is for real the state of the union when it comes to the black man in America, you feel like you cannot talk back. You feel like you cannot defend yourself. And I know that that's something that I've always been like, you know what? I'm not going out like that. Like, if the police talk to me any kind of way, unfortunately for me, I do not have the ability to allow that to take place because I don't feel like it's necessary. And, I mean, I operate on the system of respect. So you respect me, I respect you. You know, you're a regular person. If you are, if a cop pulls me over and comes over to the window and starts talking to me, why can I talk to them like a regular person? Why do I have to say yes, sir, no, sir? Yes, ma'am, mm-hmm. No, ma'am. I'm going to talk to you like I would talk to anybody else. I don't view police as authority figures. I view them as people that are hired to keep the peace, and I respect that. But based on my interactions with them and the way that I've been treated by them down through the years, I don't think that they're authority figures in my eyes. I think that they're more so almost dictators than, you know, authority figures, because they feel like, as a black man, they can tell me what to do as opposed to suggest things or talk to me or, you know, come deal with me in the correct manner. And a few years ago, I was pulled over by the police, and I was told to get, they thought that I was somebody else. And I'm telling the lady, it was a female officer, and I'm telling her, no, you have the wrong person. You need to go back and look in your little computer and run my information again and figure out that you got the wrong person. She's like, nah, it's you. Now, I'm in a Walmart parking lot, right? I'm a black man, all these white folks walking by, seeing this black male get pulled out of a car and placed in handcuffs and put in the back seat of a squad car, right? And then another car comes, so she called backup, so another car came. So now it's two cars. I'm looking like this stereotypical scenario where a black man is going to jail, where I was ultimately innocent. What wound up happening was whoever this other person was, we both had the same name. And he had warrants and all of that type of stuff, but she felt like I was a threat, and she had to handcuff me and put me in the back seat of the car in order to get me to not be violent or to keep me under control. But I really, deep in my soul, feel as though if I was a young white guy, that would not have happened. I feel like she would have allowed him to sit there. He would have said, that's not me. She would have kept going back and forth trying to figure out was it him, but she would not have treated him in that same manner. And so the racial disparities when it comes to the state of the union of the black man, is truly, I feel, substantial. And I was looking the other day, I wanted to see what it was really like. And so more than 60% of people in prison today are of color, but black men are 6 times more likely to be incarcerated than white and Hispanic men, and are 2 times more likely to be in prison. For black men in their 30s, 1 in every 10 is in prison or in jail every day. I mean, like, that's absolutely staggering. And then I was looking, 1 in 3 black men have a lifetime likelihood of imprisonment. 1 out of every 3. You look at that for Latino men, it's 1 out of every 6. You look at it for white men, it's 1 out of every 17. And then I take it to a whole nother level for you, just so y'all see exactly where I'm coming from with the state of the black man and the criminal justice system and the way we're viewed and treated. And most of these are for nonviolent crimes, even though, you know, they make it seem like we are really violent. 1 out of every 111 white women have a lifetime likelihood of imprisonment. 1 out of 111 versus 1 out of 1 in 3 black men. You cannot convince me. I don't care who you bring in the room. You cannot convince me that black men are that much more deviant than white women. It has to be something going on systematically there to be having these types of disparities.
It's one of those things, man, that makes you think about the whole innocent until proven guilty scenario. And just using you again for example, you were definitely deemed guilty before there was any scenario ran. And she immediately assumed you were guilty. And that's what happens to a large amount of brothers. And when you think about it, man, of the 2.3 million people incarcerated, nearly 1 million of those people are African American. Just take that in consideration. And when you think about the fact that you look at the statistics on our percent of the population in the U.S. as opposed to others, it's clear that we are being targeted, and it's clear that we have that stain on us that we are immediately presumed to be guilty, no matter what the crime is. And it really makes you think about the trumped up charges that a lot of brothers receive. And it's not necessarily trumped up, it's more so we get maximum sentences as opposed to a lot of people are able to get to plead down and all these other things. It's like you think about like marijuana, for example. Brothers tend to get 2 to 3 years for small amounts and things of that nature, but you look at statistics where people get, where other people, mainly white people, get probation, 60 days, things of that nature. And a lot of that has to do with the assumption that we are the dealer, or we're selling these things with a lot of it is done for recreational use. And again, there's no excuse for it. But when you look at the drug sentencing disparities, there's statistics that show about 14 million whites and 2.6 million blacks report using an illicit drug, and 5 times as many whites are using drugs as African Americans. Yet African Americans are sent to prison for drug offenses at a 10 times higher rate. And that statistically just doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. And I'm not even sure where to go with that. Are we just going to say all judges are targeting black men, or is it just the system just targeting us? And honestly, I really want to say we are immediately presumed guilty, and we're the worst offenders possible. And society has decided that we're going to get the stiffest stick. They're going to beat us with the hardest stick possible. And that is one of the things that kind of leads to the absenteeism of black fathers, and there's a natural trickle-down effect into that, how that affects our community. Because it's unfortunate, but it's a sad truth that a lot of brothers, they get taken down for small drug crimes, and that creates generations of mothers raising sons. That scenario alone is one of the things that kind of cripples our community today.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. One thing, and one of the things that first of all of that stuff bothers me to no end. Just the way that people are disposable and the way people can be deemed as insufficient and not as important as others just drives me absolutely insane. And there's not really a lot you can do about it when people have their mind set on something. However, if you want to join in the conversation, feel free to do so. The State of the Union of the Black Man in America right here on TNJ Radio, Solution-Based Radio, 347-324-5360, 347-324-5360. If you want to get in here, please feel free to do so. One of the things that Jay and I talked about and plays a huge, I don't know if it's it's hard to describe what it is, but just the image of black men when it comes to music and hip hop culture and how that has our community as well. And it's real interesting because ratchet culture has taken over. And you know, I'm only speaking for our community, the black community. I don't really know what's going on in terms of the inner workings of other areas for other people. So I can only speak for us. But black men, we have always been attracted to flashy things and showing what we have and stunting because of our past and not ever really having a lot. So when you get it, we automatically feel that we have to somehow manifest that in the physical so that other people know that we have it. And I think, you know, it's one of those things where the state of our situation is really dire, where we really focus on, we're focused on the wrong things in that area. And I know, like, I sound like an old dude when it comes to this, but I feel like hip-hop and the commercialization of hip-hop, how all of these big companies and corporations have come in and said, look, this is what we want you to rap about. This is what message should be. And it's coming from black males going into black communities by black males, being absorbed by black males and then being carried out in the streets by black males that are already frustrated, that are already down on themselves, that already have, you know, low self-esteem oozing out of their system, right? Low, you know, self-worth is already in the toilet, whether we want to admit it or not. And one thing that you'll always hear me say on here is I'll always admit that, it's honest. And if you can't admit that, then you really can't start to get to the solution. And it for me, it's just one of those things where that the music plays such a huge role in our image, the way we view ourselves as men, and what we feel like we should be doing. You know, a lot of the times, we feel like the music makes us feel like we should be out slanging or we should be out hustling, trying to make a few dollars just to make ends meet because that's what they've told us that's the way to make ends meet. It makes us feel like we have to dress a certain way and spend all of our money on material things that will be out of style the next season. I remember my young boy to buy all of these expensive jeans. This was back when the Visus was popping. And I remember I told him, I said, because there's like, they look like they had like the McDonald's sign on the back of them and all that. And I said, how long do you think those jeans are going to be popular with that design on the back of them? And he was spending like, I don't know, a couple hundred a pair, you know, on a pair. And and I ain't going to act holier than now. Like, when I was younger, I was doing the same thing, but I didn't have anybody telling me different either. But he was buying these jeans, and I said, well, how long do you think those are going to last? You know, how long do you think that's going to be popping? And he was like, I don't know. I was like, this is what I want you to do. When they done, when you can't wear them no more, hold on to them. I want to see them in like a year, and I want to see how long you can actually wear them. And so I came back, and I saw him several times in between this time passage. But I'd say like a year or two later, the Evisu phase had came and went. My man had a closet full of big, baggy, trash jeans that he couldn't wear anymore, that didn't stand the test of time. And he had blew all his paper on them. You know what I'm saying? And that's the type of stuff that they feed to us. So then he was like, all right, I'm done with the Evisus. Now I'm buying True Religions. So now you got a closet full of True Religions. And so it's just this nonstop cycle of them being these corporations feeding these messages to our brothers via rappers, via entertainers, saying this is what you need to do. This is how you define your worth. This is how you make women be attracted to you. And it's been an absolute abomination in terms of our progress as men in society, black men in particular.
And that's where it goes. When you think about it, music has always been a part of our culture. And culturally, music has always been one of those things to kind of set the tone as far as what we do and how we move. When jazz was cool, you think about the early, like, you think about the Renaissance, you think about the Miles Davis era, the Dizzy Gillespie era. Those brothers were so cool. They were so smooth. They kind of created that image for every brother. You know what I mean? And then you think about going into, like, the change-up into the Motown phase. That's when brothers really started wearing conks and all that crazy. You know what I'm saying? They kind of got into all of that. Mm-hmm. Brothers weren't really doing that then. Mm-hmm. And then when you think about it, as music changed again, as things got into the 70s, the pro-black movement, you really kind of see the pulse that it had on the people. That's when brothers started wearing afros and the way the style of dress changed. And then when you think about the 80s, as hip-hop started to form, the drug culture started to form, brothers had gotten to the point where they all wanted to be fresh. It was the leather jackets, the b-boy fits, things of that nature. And even going into the 90s and to this point today, where you see that music has always been ingrained in our culture, and it really affects how we do things. It really impacts us. And when you think about that, man, with the way hip-hop has changed and the way corporations have taken over hip-hop, this has become a beacon for them to kind of set the tone of what they want us to be. You know what I mean? It's like they've taken this opportunity, they've taken this liberty to kind of decide, hey, I want you guys to have people dressing in super tight pants. They've created a situation where brothers want to wear too small pants just so they can have a new excuse to wear their underwear out. You know what I mean? It's like it's gotten really ridiculous in the way that the culture has changed, and it impacts our fashion. It creates the fake needs and the fake wants that we have. And I'll never be the first to knock someone's personal style. You know, you're going to dress the way you want to dress, and you want to dress what makes you feel comfortable. But at the same time, it's like we have to remember what's important to us. And remember the individuality, that's also a major part of our culture. One of the things that make us great and shows the greatness that is that comes with our culture is that people can still be individuals. And when you take that into consideration and you compare that to what corporations have done to the hip-hop culture, they've kind of taken that as a method to kind of dumb us down to a certain extent. KRS-One, has this quote. It's like if people have used hip hop to destroy our people. It also has the power to uplift our people. And when you take that into consideration, it really does. When you think about the cool things that you pick up from hip-hop artists, you know what I mean? It's like it's stuff that it's not all bad. And that's something we have to remember at the same time. We don't want to degrade something that's so part of our culture, but at the same time, we have to recognize the faults of it. We have to recognize, like, hey, this isn't cool. This isn't the right thing to do. And, you know, with music, there's always been some good and bad to it. You know what I mean? And like you said, the ratchet culture taking over, there's no more, there's not enough conscious hip-hop to kind of balance that out. And I think that's what's kind of hurting us in the long run. In the long run, it's like there's not as much. It's like you think about the 80s and stuff, you had conscious MCs to kind of balance that stuff out. You know what I mean? And it's like you had Two Live Crew, but you also had KRS-One. You know what I mean? It's like there was always a good balance. There was always a good balance in hip hop, and we don't have that anymore. It's like Common isn't. Common's like one of my favorite MCs, Common. It's like he tries to balance it out a little bit more now, but it's at the same time, there's not a lot of it within hip hop. There's not enough of it, and it's kind of it's one of those things where you kind of witness it and you see it within our culture, and it's kind of one of those things that, man, you really want to focus on how you can affect change in that regard. You want to do what you can to try to show brothers and sisters that it's okay to go against the grain, maintain your individuality. You don't have to become something that you're not because this is what the so-called powers that be put in front of you. You don't have to wear pink wigs to stand out if you're a lady. You know what I mean? You don't have to be a guy and the great. You don't have to refer to every woman as a B because your favorite artist does that, and that's something that we're up against. But we have to continue to be on the task. We have to continue to be up to the task, rather, and continue to fight that.
That's funny that you mentioned that because I was just thinking about how I think it might be Young Thug, if I'm not mistaken, was calling like other male rappers bae.
I'm like, come on, bro.
If you in the dudes, man, like, I don't care. I'm the type of cat that, like, look, whatever, man, look, whatever floats your boat, man, do what you do. You know, like, that's cool. I don't care at all. But there's just certain stuff that hip-hop does or dudes in hip-hop are doing just for the sake of being wow, you know, just for the sake of it, you know, just for controversy, for people to talk about him. Like, man, come on, you know, you really don't want to call this dude bae. You just doing it just because people might talk about it, and like that type of stuff is really detrimental, in my opinion, because now you're gonna have some other dudes, you know, younger dudes calling each other bae for no reason, planting seeds in their mind that don't even really need to be planted. And so I think that's just irresponsible. But the one thing, Jay, that really was, like, we really were supposed to be jumping into our solutions right now, but I wanted to take a couple minutes to ask you about this because it really just came to my mind as we were talking, and then we can jump into the solutions because, you know, everybody knows that TNJ Radio is solution-based radio, and so we talk about all of this and we talk our ish, but at the end of the day, we definitely talk solutions. But I was just thinking about kind of the state of the black man in religion and in the church. And because I don't want to limit it to a church because black men are, you know, affiliated with different types of religion. But I was just thinking to myself, like, a large portion of the breakdown in the community really is an absentee of God in us, you know, in our men. And I just mean not Jesus, not whoever, just, you know, whoever you praise, you feel me? But the absenteeism of that and the love, most importantly, because to me, whoever you claim, you know, to follow, all of the religions, number one thing is God is love, and you should represent God by the way that you love people. And our brothers really in large numbers are missing that. And that is something that had been beat over people's heads for so long, as I was just sitting here thinking, that it chased almost every dude away from the church, it seems, and the mosque and, you know, wherever else you might go. And a lot of brothers is just lost out here because they don't have God's love in them. And I just wanted to see what you thought about that, because I know we kind of had that conversation a little bit, but it wasn't necessarily related to this topic. Or it wasn't for this show, but we talked about it off air.
Yeah, and what I'm thinking, and just taking into consideration a lot of people that I know, I think a lot of us, man, we're just afraid of it. You know, it's like we all are so consumed and worried about our doubts that we have within ourselves and our own shortcomings. We feel, a lot of us get to the point where we feel like we're unworthy of God's love, or we're unworthy of being a, feeling like we need to be affiliated with God. It's like, oh man, I got too much dirt I want to do. I don't want to go to church. Or they feel like it's something of that nature when they really need to focus on their own personal relationship. We tend to focus on the things that don't matter when it comes to your spiritual beliefs or your spiritual realm. It's like we kind of focus on a lot of the outside things. Like, oh man, I saw her in the club. I don't want to go to that place. Or, oh man, that guy kind of shady. I don't like him. We focus on the wrong things instead of focusing on what matters to us and our personal relationship with our God, whatever your religious beliefs are, if your relationship with Allah or whatever the situation is. It's all about you and that personal relationship. And I think we kind of lose sight of that. Because, again, we all have our faults. None of us are perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we all – it's hard to find people that party more than me. But at the same time, me and my relationship with my belief system, they work together, because I know it's an understanding situation, if you will. And we have to understand that at the end of the day, that belief system is a foundation for you to treat your family, your loved ones, in a way for you to carry yourself. And as a people, man, it's, again, before, and you take consideration our history before 1492, Africans across the world always had some kind of connection to a higher being. You know what I mean? We've
mm-hmm.
always had.
Mm-hmm.
That's something
mm-hmm.
that's been a part of who we are, our relationship within the universe. But I'm not even going to get into all of that. But that's something that we've always had, and we can't lose sight of that, because we're naturally a spiritual people. We're a spiritual being. That's
right.
Something that it's funny, man. It's like within our culture, we can't avoid it. You know, we can't avoid being saying thank you to someone when we wake up in the morning. We
right.
can't not do it. It's like as a people, something gets ready to happen, we're praying to somebody. We don't know who. It's like we're
mm-hmm.
praying to somebody, because that's just what we do. That's just the type of people we are. And we have to acknowledge that, hey, man, some form of belief system is important to us, and we can't avoid it. And, again, like I said, a lot of us are just afraid of it, when we should embrace it and understand that, hey, even though we are made in his image, we are made in his image, and we're striving to be that way. You know what I'm saying? I think we all lose sight of that. We're striving, and that's something we're trying to do. Because, again, none of us are perfect.
Yeah, I agree. I just thought that was really interesting, because it's just one of those things where you wonder, you know, where does the breakdown happen? And ultimately, when you look at love at its core, love is the ability to be vulnerable, right? So in order to love somebody and or to be loved, and to truly give love, you have to be willing to be vulnerable. And in order to show the love of God that's in you as a man, you have to be vulnerable. And unfortunately, a lot of us as black men in particular, man, we cannot be vulnerable. We have been taught that you cannot show weakness. You have to be a certain way. And I think that plays a huge role in us not being able to get to that place to where that love is able to be shown, because I know that our brothers have a ton of love inside of us, but it's just, you know, that exterior, that hard shell that won't allow it to come out. But I'll leave it at that. But I just thought that was really interesting, and I'm, you know, wanted to get that out in the atmosphere. But what we're going to do is get into the solutions, because, like we said, TNJ Radio, solution-based radio. And excuse me, I'm so sorry. My throat is done. What one of the things with the state of the union of the black men in America, I, you know, wrestle with the solutions on this one, and I'll be completely frank. This was the toughest so far for me to come up with solutions that were tangible. I mean, just being real.
Same here, bro.
Because you can just say some madness and be like, all right, that was my solution, right? But I mean, like, you know, we not on here for that tomfoolery. You know, we want to bring real solutions. And so I was really going back and forth on this, like, yo, what is a solution to this? And here's what I came up with, and it might be the tomfoolery that I just talked about. But, and it might be pie in the sky, but I think it's true for me personally, at least. And I think it's something that can be implemented fairly quickly. I think that for the state of the union of black men in America to improve, the black men that are doing well by whatever measure that is, because that can be, you know, that's subjective, right? But if you are in a position to where you can, you have to not be selfish and give of yourself to other young black men or other black men that are in a position of need. So here's why I say that. Once you get caught up in life, and you start going through the motions. You go to work. You come home. You hang out with family, right? You go hang out with friends in the evening every now and again. You get so caught up in your routine that you neglect doing for others. And I know so many people, including myself, that I feel I don't give of myself enough to our brothers. You know, I feel that I do, but I don't do it enough. I don't do it as much as I could. You know, I could be mentoring literally three or four young brothers right now, and I'm not doing that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm doing it in other ways, but I'm not doing it directly. And I feel that if all of the people, black men that are in positions to do so, took that responsibility on and said, look, I'm going to pour love, positivity, and my efforts into these other people and sacrifice some of my own personal time to help the greater good and to help uplift these guys with the intent that they'll do it for somebody else moving forward, I really feel like that's something that you can do literally right now or tomorrow that could, you know, that could start to put a dent in some of these things that we talked about today.
My brother, when I say you're absolutely right about this being one of the most difficult topics to choose solutions from, and again, like always, we want to focus on things that we can tangibly do right now. And my number one thing is something for me that I really believe has a lot of our issues stem from is like not having expectations. I think it's like we aspire to be what we see on the block, what we see on TV, and it's like a lot of the greatness of our culture is hidden almost. And it's like that stuff is common, like our culture, the history of our people, it's common knowledge among historians and academic types, but pop culture has has really just kind of did a number on us. And it's like that BET doc they showed the other day talking about history in America and whatever. It was, that stuff, post-slavery, I mean, post-slavery, that's not, I don't want to hear about that. Talk to me about our people, our history before 1492. Tell me about the good stuff. Talk about our true excellence.
Mm-hmm.
And learn about the guys like Mansa Musa of Mali. This guy was the wealthiest man in the history of the world, not just the history of the world. This is not something that we make up. That's factual information. You can Google this stuff. You can read books on this stuff. Your local library has information like that. Learn about King Ramses III and the Black Egyptians of the 19th dynasty and the rest of the Mali Empire. They left their footprints here in America. They were here in America before Columbus. And people don't talk about this stuff. This is the history that's not shown in our history books. And I really think if we took those opportunities to kind of educate ourselves and teach our children that there's more to our culture than what they've seen on TV, teach the culture of excellence, not that of submission. And that's something that really sticks out to me. It's like we've been taught and raised that we've been to believe that, oh, man, we've always been the subservient race. And that's what mainstream America wants us to see instead of showing us the excellence that we come from. And I promise you, the feeling that you get when you read this information, when you learn this information, it's empowering. It's like when you learn about the history of our culture, our melanin, what makes us, what allows us to do certain things, you just feel amazing. And I say, when I say, I get excited thinking about it. It's like that is one of the things that I go crazy about. And I really believe that that feeling and knowledge of knowing that our people have done more than pick cotton and been bed witches can empower us all. It gives you that excitement and that feeling that, hey, man, I can do so much more, become an athlete or an entertainer. I can aspire to be a world-class businessman. My people has been amazing for generations. You know, it's like that feeling goes a long way. And, again, it's empowering, brother. It is. I get excited thinking about it.
Hey, you know what? This is hilarious, and I'm laughing. I could actually be laughing so hard right now. I had just prepared to make fun of you while you were talking, but you said it. But you said it, and so now I can't make fun of you. But I was like, So just for all y'all listeners out there, Wales is on this kick right now where all he talks about is melanin, right? And so, I was like, I told myself over or under 10 minutes before Wales says melanin in the show. He went like real talk 28 minutes before he said melanin. And during our daily conversations, he would say melanin every 20 seconds, it seems like. So I was literally cracking up a few minutes ago because I'm like, he is not going to say it during the whole show. And then literally,
I was trying to avoid it.
As soon as I said that to myself, you said it. So that was hilarious, man. Way to not let me down, because I'm like, he's about to go this whole show and not say melanin. That was amazing, man. Well, I appreciate that. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We really appreciate it. You know, TNJ Radio, the State of the Union, Black Men in America. We really hope that you enjoyed the dialogue today. We really hope that you got some things and some information, some statistics that'll help you out, that'll you know, push you forward and encourage you to go out and do some things to help out our brothers and sisters or anybody in your life. And we just want to be positive and keep it moving. We'll see you at the same time next week, 6:30 from 6:30 to 7:30. Once again, thanks for tuning in to TNJ Radio. And always remember, God is love.